This is News in No Time at Gordon. On today's roundtable, tensions rise in Italy over the CIA. A Lincoln Memorial video causes controversy and the push behind Live Aid. Joining us to talk about all of this from our New York bureau is Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. At member station WDUQ in Pittsburgh, Bev Smith, host of the Bev Smith Show on the American Urban Radio Network. And in Nashville, Jeff Obafemi-Carr, founder and artistic director of the Amin Ra Theater. He's at Spotland Productions in Nashville. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Now, this is something that actually came to light last week, and now it is not going away. In fact, more trouble. A judge in Milan, Italy, issued arrest warrants for 13 U.S. intelligence operatives on kidnapping charges, I should note. Now we are seeing that the CIA agents allegedly kidnapped a radical Egyptian cleric from the streets of Milan and transported him to Egypt for interrogation and torture, it said. Now we're seeing denials from the Italian intelligence services who are suggesting they knew nothing about it, while CIA officials are saying, in fact, they had contacted and got the consent of Italian intelligence services before all of this went on. Robert George, one of the things that all of these agents must be hearkening for are the days of the cloak that many of these folks worked under for years and years. We would not have heard anything about this first and foremost years ago. More so, what do you think of the charges first?
I'm in a sense going to kind of reserve judgment. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if it occurred. I'm certainly not surprised that if there was communication between the U.S. intelligence agencies and the Italian agencies, and I'm also, of course, not surprised that the Italians are denying it. Because, as you said, I mean, these kind of things have gone on for years, and probably even after following some of the reforms in the late 1970s, early 1980s, these things went on. And it was sort of a hear no evil, see no evil. It's part of sometimes the ugly but necessary aspects of fighting terrorism and fighting for certain U.S. interests.
Bev, the idea that we are hearing about alleged, we should underline that, torture and interrogation from one foreign country to another, again, something that has followed and whispers the CIA around for a long time. But the fact that we're hearing more and seeing more of this in the daylight, does that speak to a new world, a new outlook on how intelligence is carried on in general?
I don't only think that it speaks to a new outlook on how intelligence is carried on in general. I think it speaks to a new kind of relationship between America and countries that used to be the allies. What's so interesting about this particular story is that the Italian central government, which would be like the Bush administration, was not a part of the investigation. That a private, acting independently, Italian investigation showed that the United States allegedly, I'll use your politically correct word, did the kidnapping. We've been kidnapping people all along and sending them to places that torture them. This is not new. We did the same thing to a Canadian citizen. So I'm looking for this to put front and center what the United States has been involved in. Now, other countries do it too, but I'm worried about our country. We should not forget that we kidnapped Noriega. Does anyone remember him? That we held in prison for a very long time, Marcos. So we have a history of doing this. I'd like to see how we get out of this one and what it says to other countries. We've been doing the same thing in those countries. Maybe their independent investigators will step forward also.
Jeff, it seems to me, and we don't oftentimes like to admit this, but the United States is, in fact, the world police. But I am seeing more and more countries stand up against the giant and push back far more than I'd ever seen in years past. What does this say, if anything?
Yeah, and I agree with you, Ed. I think now that the world that we live in today, everybody feels as if they have their own right to be self-determining. And even if that means standing up against the United States. And there are a couple of points that we can make here about the Italian job, so to speak. Number one is that we as a general public never really know what's really going on, period, nor do we fully ever, I don't think we're ever going to fully understand, especially in the post 9/11 world of what the CIA calls extraordinary renditions, where U.S. operatives shuttle suspects, and in this case, an abductee to third party countries. The second point is what scares me about this is that the U.S. argument is that they don't send abductees to countries where they're likely to be tortured. Now, they aren't denying they snatch people off the streets. That's okay. The third point is that the Italians aren't playing on this one. They've issued the indictment for the 13. They want to extradite the Americans. Now, how's that for turnabout? How often does that happen? We all know that the U.S. may even openly laugh at Italy for having that much nerve. And I think that that's going to deepen the growing divide between the U.S. and the rest of the world.
What does this speak to, Robert George, in terms of the CIA in and of itself? Again, perhaps some years ago, the most powerful agency, and I'm also talking about in juxtaposition to any presidential administration you might put it next to, but it does seem to have been tarnished over the last few years.
Well, it has. And the CIA, I mean, both the CIA and the FBI came down with a whole wall of criticism following 9/11 because of clear failures there. In fact, some people see the CIA as kind of the loser, quote unquote, in a lot of the intelligence juggling that's intelligence overhauls that have happened in the last few months. And I would say that I think it's true that the CIA is in itself is trying to find out what its new role is, and we're gonna see how this case plays out, because if it looks now as if Italy and other somewhat friendly countries to us aren't going to, in a sense, respect the role of the CIA, it's going to it'll end up being another black eye towards the organization.
We saw. Go ahead, Bev, real quick for me.
Well, I think it's also interesting, the denial. As I mentioned earlier, we've been involved in kidnapping before, so let's take the gloves off and talk about who we are. If this happened, and I believe it did, and if the government, CIA, is picking out people, and they've done that all over the world before, then I'd like to see this one come straight out in the public, because let us trace who ordered it. The CIA doesn't operate in a vacuum. Who ordered this? Did it come directly from the CIA heads, or did it come from higher-ups in the Bush administration? Let's go all the way with this one so we as Americans can find out what is happening.
And it should also be pointed out, though, that sometimes this is a very ugly business, the idea of intelligence, and it, in some cases that they need to do extra means to protect the United States, which is the point.
But kidnapping an Egyptian citizen, if they did it, and I believe they did, and sending that citizen to be tortured, pinpointing, you know, we call it driving white black if we're a black American, pinpointing people on the basis of what you think. We have to be very careful about that. After all, gentlemen, aren't we the ones that keep talking about democracy? Aren't we in a war because of it? So if we're behaving this way, how can we set an example? Which is exactly why a lot of us are against the war in Iraq. We talk one thing, or as the Indians used to say, the Native Americans, white man speaks with forked tongue. You talk one way and do another.
Or as Cameo said, speaking out of the side of your neck. But, you know, let me ask this, though, Jeff, real quick, and then we're going to move on to something else. The president spoke very plainly and very clearly last week and reiterated what he said immediately after 9/11, and that's it's a new ball game. And we are not going to wait for people to attack us again. Is there any leniency here if, in fact, the CIA, and we'll never know this, they're not going to come out and say, but if they assume that this person that they abducted was part of a plan to, again, design something like that, are we now suggesting that this is just post 9/11?
Yeah, I think it's post 9/11.
You said the president spoke clearly.
I don't think it's a dual-edged sword. It's almost oxymoronic sometimes. I think when you talk about political figures on either side, to say that they spoke clearly. I don't know if that's kind of tough to define. But really, I do think that in post 9/11 days, we run a dual danger. On one hand, you want security and you want to be able to find threats and eliminate them before they actually manifest. But on the other hand, who is in charge of determining who exactly is a threat? And that's what scares me. And the point that I was making earlier comes up again. And that's not that we weren't denying that people get snatched up. The denial was we don't send them where people get tortured. Mm-hmm. But we know that there are all kinds of reports of people being tortured, even in the camps of Guantanamo Bay. So I think that we have to really look at the fact that they can come and get you. Big Brother is very real in the day we live in, and we won't ever know what's fully going on because the answer that always comes out is this is a matter of national security.
All right, let me move us on to another subject before one of you gets snatched up as you leave the studios. Let's move our attention to the Live 8 concert. So, which were designed to raise consciousness about African poverty. One of the interesting points, and we should say that this was an offshoot of the 1985 Live Aid concerts that brought attention to famine at that point in Africa and the poor conditions, and it was the baby and brainchild of Bob Geldof, the organizer of that event, as well as the driving force behind this one. Here's the interesting point. Initially, there were criticisms that the Live Aid concerts weren't, quote, black enough, that we're helping Africa out, yet most of the acts were white. There was some criticism about the same here, though people like Russell Simmons, Chris Tucker, Destiny's Child, Alicia Keys all performed and were part of this year's event. Here's the interesting point, though. There is criticism now that not enough is being done by the black community to raise attention to the plight of Africa. In particular, they're pointing to black artists in this way. Why wait for Bob Geldof to bring attention to this and to raise the consciousness level through these concerts? Why aren't black artists doing more?
Well, that's a very good question. That's an excellent question. But when we look at the history of Africa and who has always petitioned for the right, we find that with rare exception, and the rare exception is the late Leon Sullivan, or in New Jersey, a very fine African-American congressman, or Danny Davis and others. But really and truly, the issue of what is right and wrong in Africa has always been championed by whites. Now, the question is, should we be pointing a finger just at the hip-hop generation, as I've been doing on my show about getting involved in issues of concern for African-Americans, or should we be pointing the finger across the board? You do not hear a cry from the civil rights people at all about comparing what is happening in the dilemma of AIDS and HIV on the continent and here in the United States, connecting the dots. So I am not surprised that whites have been involved because they've always been involved. Yeah, but I am surprised that we're picking alone on the hip-hop generation because the criticism can be spread around.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I mean at least I guess in the early to mid 80s you did have a few African Americans involved when the issue was South Africa and ending apartheid and so forth, but it is unfortunately true that now that the issues have changed, and you know, pardon the pun, it's not quite black and white as it was before, and it focuses on issues such as debt and economics and so forth. Unfortunately, African Americans haven't, at least from the celebrity side, haven't been as involved as they should have been.
Hey, Jeff, broaden this, if you will. Take it outside of the plight and problems of Africa and include the idea of the plight and problems of the downtrodden and others here, people of color in this country, and take it outside of the celebrity world and just, if you will, use a monolith of the black community in general. There are complaints and cries, usually whispers around the barbecue or the kitchen table. We don't like to necessarily always air the dirty laundry in public, that African Americans just aren't doing enough to correct their blight. It's part of what Bill Cosby has either been applauded or chastised for.
Yeah, I think activism is something that definitely needs to take place, and that's everywhere from what Bev referenced as the civil rights community group to down to the hip-hop community and beyond. All of us in general need to stop being victims of what I call the Pied Piper paradigm. I mean, it's popular now to have Africa as a cause. Bono, to his credit, with U2, has put time, money, and clout into activism against AIDS in Africa. The resulting fallout, though, mostly because of the media attention that comes from seeing a white guy speak out for Africa, is the support of this Pied Piper paradigm, where black artists, sadly, continue to follow the leader. Wherever it's popular, we follow, and we need to be more self-determinant. I'm glad our artists are helping now. I believe that we're called on to move in directions of activism that we initiate, though, as a community.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, gentlemen? I think that this is a little bit, if I can go a little bit deeper now, I see this as the issue that I see is that we as Africans in America have had a real hard, difficult time because of racism. Oh, I said the word. Because of racism in identifying with people who look like us who come from Africa. Some of us still have a problem in 2005, can I get an amen, saying we're Africans in America or African America. So I think that this is just deeper than AIDS and HIV and the problem of forgiving the debt. I think this is the real issue of how we identify ourselves. And on college campuses, if you talk to African students from Sacramento to the state of Washington, Seattle, where there's a large contingency, to Denver, Colorado, where I met Nigerians, if you talk to them, they say, black people don't come and talk to us. They view us as the enemy. If you talk to those from the Caribbean who are in New York, Robert, you know this, same identical thing. We African Americans have a problem stretching our hand to people who look like us because of racism. And that needs to be put on the table. And you're right, Ed, it's an uncomfortable issue. We don't like to talk about disliking the color of our skin.
Robert, 30 seconds.
I was just going to say that the other irony is that the other group that's becoming more involved in African issues are white Christian conservatives here in America, and it's a shame that that African Americans aren't even being involved even more so than them.
Jeff, real quick for me.
Yeah, indeed. That's something that I encounter all the time from a ministerial perspective and also from a community perspective, and that is that it's becoming popular in very, very conservative, white Southern Baptist congregations here in the South to now support Africa. And something about that doesn't seem to jibe for me. Mm. There's also an added mission element, but we'd have to talk about that at another
time. That'll take another show.
In fact, that is the case.
Show,
Robert George, Bev Smith, Jeff Obafemi Carr, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it. And where else but this roundtable will you hear the plight of the CIA and a quote from Cameo at the same time? All right, take a break here. Columnist or novelist B.B. Moore Campbell takes on mental illness in her new novel, and musician Stanley Clark brings the bass out front and center. You're listening to News and Notes from NPR News.